Hello, and welcome to the Her Sport Show, where we provide insight into the women's game across various sports. With high-profile guests and taboo-breaking discussions, the Her Sport Show is here to empower women in sport. Let's get into it. Okay, so just to start off with something fun, a bit different. Do you have like a routine that you follow just before you race? Is there maybe like a ritual you do or a playlist you have that you always listen to?
I think all swimmers kind of have like a timeline that they'll follow. Maybe not necessarily like a routine, but I guess you could call it a routine, but more like a timeline. So for me, it's different for everybody, but I like to be at the pool about 90 minutes before I swim, which some people would say that's too little, but I kind of like having to just go, 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 as opposed to having to stop and think, kind of. I usually arrive about 90 minutes beforehand and then just start with a bit of dry land training, just, you know, mobility to get ready to get in the pool. And then I'd usually warm up for around 30 or 40 minutes. I'd usually do around 2K in the pool. Just different things, drilling, swimming, and a bit of fast stuff just to prepare yourself. And then what all swimmers dread is putting on our racing suit. So that can take a while. It doesn't take too long for me. But yeah, then again, it depends. But and then that's about 30 minutes before your race. And then we have to report to the call room 15 minutes before each race. The only time I listen to music is in the call, sorry, not in the call room. I do not listen to music in the call room. When I'm putting on my skins. And I have to do that every time. And I always listen to the same song first. And then it doesn't matter what songs I listen to after that, but I always listen to that same song first.
And what is that song?
Okay, so it's not even that good of a song, but it's actually because I listened to this song just because I liked it at the time before all my races in Tokyo. So it's kind of like I've kept it up since then. I have to do it every time I race now. So it's Bad Habits by Ed Sheeran, which is not even a song that I like anymore, but it's just, I don't know, it's like I have to do it now before each race if I want to do well. Like I have that little superstition in my head, so
that is so awesome though.
Yeah.
I did not expect that song.
Yeah, it's very random. It's very, very random.
Okay. And is there maybe also like a go-to snack that you always have just before you swim? And then also after you swim, is there like something that you can't wait to just eat?
Well, I think it's very much try and eat the same before racing, similar foods, foods that you're used to and that your stomach is used to. So usually if I had a morning race, you'd eat breakfast and then go to the pool. And then some people would have a bar or something like that, a cereal bar at the pool or something like that. Me, I'd have a few jellies just for the sugar. And then similar in the afternoon, for finals or for an evening race, you try to eat your big meal. I think I like to do it around 3 hours before I race, so not too long before you leave to go to the pool. And then the same, just a few jellies, caffeine, if you take caffeine beforehand. And then after the race, it's some form of recovery. And you try and get that into you as quickly as possible after your race. So if it's a recovery shake or a Lucozade or a Powerade or something that will replenish you after your race, and then also just a few more jellies or another little snack, and then that's straight after your race, and then you try and go back and try and have a good big dinner, especially if you're racing the following day again.
And what's like your favorite dinner, you'd say?
That's a difficult one. I think like my favorite dinner would not be what I eat at competition. At competition, you try to stick to like a meat, a carb, and a veg, simple foods like that. I would say one of my favorite meals, and you can have this, a lot of people eat this as well, around racing, is pasta. It can be quite basic around racing, but I would say probably a pasta dinner would probably be my top, one of my favorite dinners.
But I think pasta will always take preference.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not an athlete, but I love a good pasta. And also
let's just go back to the beginning of your story. So you grew up in Limerick and you're the oldest of three sisters. You have three younger sisters, yeah. Sorry. And growing up, were you involved in a lot of sports or was it always just swimming?
So for me, my parents, I think with my vision, with my eyesight, I was born with my eyesight the way it is now. So from a young age, my parents tried to get me involved in as much as possible and to participate and to treat me the same as everyone else. But obviously, I wasn't able to keep up all of those sports as I grew up. Like I did tennis when I was younger, so you can imagine how that one would have gone. I did that and I did some running over the years and little bits of sports in school, but nothing much. And then I also did swimming. And I got into swimming literally for the same reason most other people do, and just for that water safety, to be confident in the water, to be able to swim. So it was literally something as small as that that got me into it. And then I suppose it became clear after a couple of years that swimming was the one that I was the best at, but also that I loved and that I was able to keep up with my eyesight as well.
Okay, and which events are you involved in now as well?
In my classification, there's 6 or 7 events, I think, and I would swim them all. I think at big competitions, I swim 5 at the moment in big competitions. So I swim the 100 fly, 100 back, 100 breast, 200 IM, and the 400 free.
Okay, and you swim in the S13 category, is that correct? So can you maybe just touch a bit more on that? So what is that category actually?
So in para swimming, it goes from S1 to S14. So S1 to 10 is physical impairment, S11 to 13 is visual impairment, and then S14 is an intellectual impairment. So I'm S13, so out of the visual impairment classifications, it's the least visually impaired. So you'd have S11s, they'd be completely blind, they have to wear blackout goggles and they have tappers. Then you have S12s who are partially sighted, they can choose to have a tapper if they want. And then S13s were the least of the visual impairment.
Okay, and thanks for sharing that, by the way. Very helpful. And you made your world stage debut at the World Para Swimming Series in Italy in late 2020. So obviously that was during the COVID pandemic. So how did the lockdown impact your training?
So that competition actually got pushed back to 2021.
Okay.
So I was meant to go in 2020, and about 3 nights beforehand, maybe even 2 nights beforehand, we got a call to say, unfortunately, Italy has gone into lockdown, so you won't be able to travel. And that's where I was getting classified, like internationally classified for my first time. So, you know, we didn't really know what that meant in terms of the games that summer, and hopefully being able to qualify. So everything was kind of up in the air at that point. And then obviously Ireland went into lockdown and I was out of the water from March until I think early to mid-June maybe. So it was 3 months. Now we continued, I have a great group at home, and we continued on Zoom most days of the week doing different kind of exercises as much as we could, adapting with what equipment we had at home and stuff like that. And then, yeah, we were back in the water then, and it was kind of just from June that year until the following maybe February. We didn't get a break until that summer, but so it was pretty much over a year straight through. But until February, we were really just kind of grinding in the pool, making up for that time that we'd lost. So really, really, really tough training, really getting the mileage in. And that was a difficult couple of months. And there was also a second lockdown in that period. And I was the only girl, there was only 5 of us, and I was the only girl training for I think 6 or 8 weeks. So that was difficult, but you know, I think it shaped me a bit more into kind of the athlete that I was able to become during that period of time, having to do kind of everything by myself. And then I got to go to that same competition that was cancelled a year later. So we went away, there was 8 of us, and we went away in a training camp beforehand for 2 weeks. We went to Fuerteventura. That was my first time kind of, I'd met a few of the team before, but that was my first time meeting them all along with all the staff. And it was a really, really enjoyable trip. You know, I made friends with them there that they're all still my friends now. And then 2 of us were meant to go to Italy, and just at that time Italy went on the red list again. So they had to make the decision just to send me and a member of staff. So it was very much just kind of do the competition, get classified and get home and just hope for the best. But no, everything worked out there, and I got classified there, and I got my qualifying times at that competition for the Tokyo that summer.
Okay, wow. And that was probably quite an interesting experience for you as well, because I can imagine that that competition was probably not the way you had expected, like your first major competition to go, right?
Definitely not at all. I think with all the different COVID protocols and just different things that I suppose they were normal to me because I didn't know any different. But, you know, like plastic bags, you had to keep all your clothes in one big plastic bag so that people could like take them away without touching your stuff, and you to obviously socially distance. And there was loads of different things just around the competition pool or around the hotel that we were staying in. And then obviously the fact that I was the only athlete would make it different as well, and not how you'd probably expect your first international. But I still, it was great learning experience for later on that summer.
Yeah. And I'm sure mentally it was also a bit challenging as well. So during that whole period, like, what would you say kept you motivated to keep trying and keep working at it?
Yeah, it was definitely an emotional roller coaster, I think, over that kind of year and a half. Because you just didn't know, it was something different every week. You know, you didn't know if things were opening back up, or, you know, would we be able to swim? Wouldn't we? Everything was really up in the air. And it was out of our control, completely out of our control. So I think the emotions that go with that, you know, you have highs and lows and your emotions are just up and down. So mentally it obviously is challenging, but I just think that goal in my mind of qualifying for the games, I think that's kind of what kept me going throughout. That's what kept me getting up every morning to do the training online, even though it definitely wasn't fun. But, you know, it was that goal that I had in my mind that kind of kept me going through that difficult year or 6 months.
And then you went on to make your Paralympic debut and you were just 16 years old. I think that is insane to actually think about it. So really well done for that. And do you remember how you felt when you actually realized, oh my gosh, I'm heading to the Paralympics?
I think when I look back now, I feel as though I was so young back then. And I know it's only 2 years ago and I'm only 2 years older. But I look back at myself and I think, oh my God, like I was such a child back then. Like I kind of just took everything in that was going on around me and I didn't really know the significance of it. I don't think at the time. I kind of just went with the flow, kind of did my thing, got up and raced. And, you know, obviously I understood what it was and I understood what was going on and everything. But I kind of just, it was kind of just, for me, it was just taking it all in rather than stopping to kind of realize where I was, what I was doing, that kind of thing. And I think just because I was so young, that it was that way as well.
That is so awesome though. And what was the experience like? What was it like being in the village with all the athletes?
The village, it surprised me. I always say this to people, I'm not quite sure what I was expecting when I heard of it, but it wasn't what I was expecting. You share apartment blocks with different countries, and that's what the village is. It's loads of different apartment blocks with loads of different countries, and then you have your shops and you have your bus stop, you have your food hall, and stuff like that. So, you know, there wasn't, because of COVID, there wasn't much that we could do. We couldn't leave at all. It was very much, you walked, our block was right across in the food hall, so you walked literally across the road into the food hall and back a couple of times a day, and then to the bus to get to the pool. So there wasn't very much, like, you got to interact with people, but very minimal compared to what would be normal, I think. So we had very little interaction with people at the food hall. So mainly, I think, at the pool and competing is when you kind of got to meet everyone from different countries. And obviously you got to see them all around the village, and that was really cool. Just to see, you know, people had come from all different areas in the world, all the different sports. And yeah, no, it was really cool to see. But yeah, I think, you know, I would say that I definitely made friends there with some of the girls who I'm competing against. We're all quite friendly. Even before the races and after the races, some people don't want to talk before the races, but others do. And it's nice just to be able to, I like to be able to just chill out and have a chat. And, you know, when it's time to get up and race, then that's when it's time to be serious. But yeah, no, definitely made loads of different friends from around the world as well.
Oh, that's really cool. And I can imagine also, like, I think just in general, if you're an athlete or not, just to, like, be able to meet people who come from, who speak different languages, different cultures, but you all united because of sport. I think that's something really cool. And that you also were able to say, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm actually a Paralympic athlete, got to experience that. It's a really great achievement.
Yes, so well it's done. Really special, yeah.
So you're also an ambassador for Sport Ireland's Changing the Game campaign, which is a campaign that aims to support Sport Ireland's diversity and inclusion policy in sport, which expresses its vision for a sports sector that celebrates diversity, promotes inclusion, and is proactive in providing opportunities for lifelong participation for everyone. So what does being an ambassador for this campaign mean to you?
Yeah, so I think this campaign is just about kind of showing people, and especially the younger generation, that regardless of your background or where you come from or if you have a disability, that you can all be part, and you can all be part in sport, and that there is a place in sport for everybody, regardless of, you know, where you come from or if you have a disability. So I think it's just really important to promote that, and especially to the younger generation that are coming up.
That is so true. And again, yeah, like you said, like, there is a space for everyone in sport. And I think it's so cool that you are able to also be an ambassador and yeah, just share that message with so many other young up and coming athletes as well. So brace yourselves for your sports CV, can I call it that? So you won bronze in backstroke at your first European Championships in 2021, two bronze medals at your first World Champs in 2022, broke two world records at the Irish Winter Championships in 2022, and set another world record at the Paris Swimming World Series in Berlin this May. These really just great achievements for someone who had to fit in training and your competition schedule, all while having to consider your leaving cert. So how did you manage to do that? Like, how did you find that routine and that balance?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a big year in terms of swimming and school and having to balance them. And I think I'm out the other side now, so I'm just so happy to be finished with my leaving cert. Yeah. But yeah, I think for me, it's just about having kind of a routine that I can follow and that I can stick to every day. So just knowing exactly what I need to do at each point of the day. So I mightn't have as much time as others, you know, when I go home in the evening time, but it's just about how I can use that time efficiently to get, I suppose, what I need to get done in terms of schoolwork. Because we spend, you know, 2 hours at the pool at the 2 hours in the pool in the morning, and then a further two or three depending if we've gym in the evening. So for me, it meant I left the house at around 5 each morning, and I didn't get back till 6-7 each night. So it really didn't leave much time for schoolwork in the evening, but it was just about how did I manage my time efficiently to maximize the amount I was able to get done in that time. And then especially the weekends were key for me in terms of school. It was very much just the weekends were just, if I didn't have competition, they were just in front of my books, studying, trying to soak in as much of the information as I could every weekend. So yeah, and then in terms of swimming, I was able to continue my swimming the entire way through, and that was what was important for me at the start of the year. I kind of said that I wanted to be able to do them both, and people might have said, no, it's too much, you know, it's too much, you can't swim 9-10 sessions a week, go to school each day and study for your Leaving Cert, but I knew that I could do it, and I wanted to be able to do it while being able to continue my swimming completely as normal. So I was able to do that. So I was very happy with myself at the end to be finished then.
I think that is a big achievement. And I was actually having a conversation with someone the other day as well, that sometimes people doubting you can actually be you can turn that into motivation. So would you say that was the same for you as well?
Definitely. I think, you know, people telling me that maybe I couldn't do them both, or it was too much, or, you know, one's got to give, or just maybe pull back this little bit. But I knew myself that I suppose that I was going to prove them wrong, and that I knew that I'd be able to do it. So it was just about kind of putting my head down for the year, and it was only 1 year and I'm out the other side now. Yeah. So
I can not chill entirely, but like you don't have to worry about that anymore. Yes. So you'll be heading to your second World Championships this August in Manchester. So how's the preparation going for that, and how are you feeling about the World Champs?
I'm very excited. I love competing and I love racing regardless of the competition. I just love being able to get up behind the blocks, and I know some people find it nerve-wracking and some people prefer the training aspect maybe, but no, for me, I really, really love the racing. So I think this year, not being able to race as much, having to make those one or two sacrifices for my school or for my, if I had exams on, then I've gotten to race a couple of times less than I usually would. So definitely, you know, I'm really excited now to be able to go away and have my school out of the way with, over and done with. And yeah, the preparation is going very well. I'm out of school a month now almost. So it's just been head down for the last couple of weeks after exams, and we're only 2 weeks out now. So it's kind of starting to, as we like to call it, the words we love, we're starting to taper now. So we're starting to kind of bring that mileage down a little bit in preparation for Worlds.
Okay. Can you maybe also touch on that term as well, taper? Because not many people might also know about it. I know I didn't really know that much about it until I think the other day I actually Googled it, but could you please just share what that is?
So taper is basically your workload. It depends. You can do it a couple of different ways. You can bring down your mileage, you can bring down the intensity, but basically it's just about kind of bringing your workload down that little bit, different depending on each person. Each person will take to it a different way, so that you can have maximum energy come race time, so you can be well rested and recovered so that you're ready to go as fresh as you can be for race day. So usually people taper once or twice a year. You wouldn't taper much more than that, just because you have to come all the way down and it's quite difficult to get back up again. It's not immediate, you have to build back up. So it takes a while, and I think depending on the person, taper can last. For some people, taper can be a month long. I'm not that lucky. I do not need a long taper at all, so my taper is about a week. But yeah, so it works differently. It is very, very individual, but it's just about kind of finding how it works for you, the different things that you might need to do. But ultimately, it's just about maximizing the energy you have come race day.
Okay. And just again, going back to the World Champs coming up. So will you again be competing in 5 or 6 different events? Which events will you be competing in?
So I'm swimming 5 events over the 7 days. So I'm racing, I think, day 1, 2, 4, 5, or 4, 6, and 7. So I've got 2 days off in between, which is quite nice. I have a couple of straight finals. So I've 3 straight finals, I think, and then 2 heats and finals. So that kind of lessens the program a little bit, I think, not having those heats in those 3 events. So hopefully then that'll just mean that I have that much more energy come day 7.
And, okay, I'm not a swimmer. I really struggle to stay afloat. So how do you feel that you are obviously very talented in all these different swimming events, but how did it come to you deciding to swim all of them? Could you not choose, like, decide on one? Because in my mind, I would think as a swimmer, I would probably want to focus on one. I've been trying to master, like, the doggy paddle forever. I still can't get it right. But yeah, so how did you go about to getting into so many?
From when I was younger, I was always a back crawler, and that was kind of always my event when I was younger. But even when I was younger, I used to swim everything. I was just lucky to be a well-rounded person who could swim all the strokes. And then I think recently I've based most of my training around IM training. So that's individual medley. So it's all 4 strokes. So the 200 IM would be 50 fly, 50 back, 50 breast, 50 free. So in training for that event, you are training each stroke. So it then lets me be able to compete each stroke, which I do. Obviously, all different distances depending on the stroke. But I think having that IM background, I always say that I'm an IMer with a back crawl focus. So IM and back crawl are probably my 2 best. But I enjoy swimming all the strokes, and I think swimming all the strokes benefits my IM then in the end.
And this is this World Champs that's coming up, will it be one of the Paralympic qualifiers?
So this summer is the start of when you can get slots. So you get slots for your country based on your rank. So if you place 1st or 2nd in an event, you get a slot. And that slot is for your country as opposed to the individual. And then it is after that, then it is your rank for the rest of the year until the following January. And that's how you get slots. And then you get the slots for your country. And then the selectors, then you obviously have to go off and get the qualifying times. And then if the decisions need to be made, then those decisions have to be made about who gets the slots based on who's closer. It's different in that you don't get your own slot. You actually get it for the team, which makes it interesting.
Yeah, but very, very exciting as well. And I think also for you, I mean, you were 16 when you went to your first games, and now you could potentially be going to your second. We're rooting for you. We know you can do it. So I think, yeah, it's really cool and exciting for you as well. And looking towards the future, what's on the table for you? Like, what are your goals? Will you be going to college? Yeah, what's the plan?
Goals academically, I would like to go to college next year in UL, hopefully. So I'll be able to continue my training there as normal. So I'd like to study teaching, teaching in biology and chemistry. So I've had a love for sciences. That was my thing in school. So hopefully to continue that, to continue doing what I like to do and what I find interesting. And then swimming, just to keep swimming. Obviously the goal is to qualify for Paris next year. So that's number one goal, I think, after this year's Worlds.
Okay. That is super exciting. And I think also teaching, I always found teaching's quite an interesting career path because you are training the next generation that's coming through. So it's very exciting. And also, I think it's a really cool career, yeah. And another question for you, why would you say you love swimming? How has it impacted your life?
I think I've loved it for as long as I can remember. Just for me, the being in the water, you know, the calmness of it, although it's not always calm, definitely when we're training very hard, but just the calmness and the quietness of just being able to, it's quite individual in that when you're swimming, you know, you can't hear, see anything that's going on, you know, you're very much in your own lane, quite literally, and just head down, you know, up and down the pool. And I think there's just, for me, there's just something really nice and I suppose calming, if you can call it that, about that. And yeah, I think just, I was always, my parents called me a water baby. When I was younger, I always loved being in the water, for God, as long as, from, I'd say, from when I was first put in the water, they could never get me out of the water. So I think it's been, that love has been for as long as I can remember.
And I'm sure many young women and girls are looking up to you and are really inspired by your story and what you've achieved as well, and what you're setting out to do for yourself. So what advice would you give to younger girls and women, and why would you encourage them to take up sport?
I think the most important bit of advice is to stick with it, to keep going, to stay kind of determined. You know, it mightn't always be going in the direction you wanted to go, or it mightn't always work out exactly how you wanted to. But I think the most important thing you can do, especially in sport, is to just keep that determined, the hard work, and eventually that hard work that you put in, the determination, all those long hours, they will pay off. In the end, you know, you mightn't see it all the time, but in the end, they will pay off. And I think it's just so important for especially young people is to keep going and to not give up.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much for sharing that. And yeah, thanks for chatting with me today. I don't know if you guys have any other questions that you maybe thought of one.
I like the records you have, right? It seems to me that there was a difference between your performance in the Paralympics in Tokyo when you were 16 versus now those 2 years. Like, it seems like you got everything in a short space of time. What are you having for breakfast in order to get those?
I've grown so much in the 2 years that it's been since Tokyo. Mm-hmm. I think I've definitely matured a lot as a person, but as definitely as an athlete. Just I think each competition away, kind of learning more and more about what I should be doing or what I could be doing better to, you know, better my performances. The small details are, I suppose, what matters, and they're kind of what I've really knuckled in on over the past year or two. So I think that's been the biggest thing, and just, you know, keeping going training, and I've been injury free now, so that is helps to, I suppose, improvements, little improvements. I was never the kind of person who could go out and take multiple seconds off, but I'm quite consistent, so you know, just a half a second here or a half a second there, just over the years, that's kind of what it is for me.
And I think also just for an athlete to be able to say that they've been like injury free, that's a big one. So what do you think contributed to you being able to say that you've never actually had to struggle with that?
So I think for me, it's just about staying on top of, we really focus very much on the pre-pool. And I think that's really, really important for swimming. Especially you hear of loads of swimmers getting shoulder injuries. It's probably the most common one. So it's just about kind of being fully warmed up outside of the pool before you can go in the pool to swing your arms over your head loads and hundreds of times probably in a session. So that's, I think, what's key for us is being fully warmed up before we get in the pool. And we also have, we also focus heavily on mobility and keeping kind of stretched and loose. And I think that's really, really important to prevent injuries as well.
Mm. And then I also just thought of another question as well. So swimming, like you mentioned, it is an individual sport, but you're also part of a team as well. So I can assume that just being a part of your team and just having that dynamic is also such a motivator as well, because when you're racing, I'm sure that they're on the side as well, cheering you on. So what is it like being a part of a swim team?
So definitely swimming is known to be an individual sport. You know, you're racing for yourself, but you're also racing for your team and your country. And it is, you know, really lovely to have them, you know, there to cheer you on. And I think you all kind of bounce off one another. You know, if one person has a good performance, you start up the week well, you know, for the team. And that's really encouraging then for the rest of the team, and helps them get out and swim maybe with that bit more confidence, knowing that your teammate has swam well before you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important. And it's lovely to hear them before the races. So before Tokyo, we obviously didn't have the crowd or anything like that. It was just team members that could be at the pool. And before all of my races, I'd be able to hear them, which was really nice. That for such a small country, such a small team like Ireland, we were able to make that noise, and I was able to hear them before the start of every race, which was really nice.
Mm, yeah. So also, so your parents were not able to watch you either?
No, there was no spectators at all in Tokyo. So I was off as a little 16-year-old by myself.
So I feel like also during that, especially the COVID period, you sort of had to, I would say, independence. You were sort of like forced to actually becoming a bit more independent. And I can imagine, though, that it was also tough not being able to have your parents there. But I'm sure, like, they were rooting. So were they at home, or did they also go with to Tokyo?
No, so they stayed at home and they had, like, little parties for me at home that I didn't even know about, some of them. But, yeah, no, so I would say definitely it made me more independent. Mm-hmm. Before joining the team, I'd never travelled by myself without my parents before. So there's definitely that aspect of having to mature and become more independent at a younger age, which I think is very important, and it's really helped me, I think.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope to see you again for the next episode. Be sure to subscribe to Her Sports social platforms to get the latest Women in Sports content. We'll be right back.